Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. Jerome's to my right. And this is Stuff You Should Know.
There's probably some people going, did they replace Jerry?
With
some
Jerome?
Guy named Jerome.
Yeah, no.
That's just the nickname we have for Jerry.
It's an arcane reference to the librarian at the beginning of Ghostbusters whose uncle thought he was St. Jerome. Remember?
Oh, really?
That's what I've always been referencing. I thought we were on the same page about it.
We also call her Jers.
That's a reference to nothing.
Yeah.
Right, Jerry?
Right.
That was a great Jerry, Chuck. Chuck.
Yes.
Have you ever been on the Internet of Things?
Well, you can't really be on the Internet of Things.
I don't understand. Explain.
Well, the Internet of Things, my friend, is really just a collection of interconnected devices.
Yeah.
To make your life simpler and more and less private.
Pretty much.
And fraught with potential complications.
Yeah.
But more convenient.
Allegedly. There's a lot of people who also say this is all just a bunch of navel gazing in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, like, do we really need these apps? I ran across a vape for smoking weed, as they call it, that has an app.
It's a vaping system for smoking.
It's just a little pipe.
Marijuana.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a little pipe.
Yeah.
And it has an app that goes with it that remotely controls it, the heat settings and stuff.
Oh, does it like track things? Like you've smoked
you know,
1 ounce of weed this month.
No, which would be pretty intriguing, I guess. That
pretty
would be
useless.
And that's the point. There's a lot of stuff that you can point to and say, this is pretty neat. This thing feeds my cat while I spend 23 hours a day at work.
Yeah, that's neat.
It's nice that I can keep this cat alive that I have no connection with any longer because I'm at work all the time, but this machine feeds it because I can control it remotely with an app.
Right, but if you have something tracking how much weed you smoke, you're either smoking far too much or not nearly enough.
Or you have too much money. Is another way to put it, too.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know what? My friend Clay, don't know if you've met Clay, but he told me something. The way, as far as being concerned about security and privacy rights and things, is
right.
What they do is they sell it to you first as a convenience.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, you know, ..
Clay never finished the sentence, huh?
He did, but you know, I don't remember exactly how he finished it. Clay said this in, like, 1993.
Oh, yeah? I think I'd like Clay.
Like, way before, like, he was probably just talking about, geez, I don't even know, like, a credit card or something.
Right.
And he was just like, just beware, man. And he was like, they sell it to you as a convenience. And before you know it, everyone is doing it that way.
Yeah.
And it's fraught with complications, was essentially what he was saying.
Yeah, I think that's very prescient because that's exactly the point that we're at right now.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little more, well, a lot more, I'm sure, about security and privacy and all that stuff. But ultimately, it's like you said, the Internet of Things is this. A lot of other people call it the Internet. Like, this is just the next wave of the Internet. This is where the Internet's going. But the I guess the best description of it is it's a series of interconnected machines.
Yeah, devices.
That sense the environment in a lot of cases, can carry out some sort of function. Usually it is a sensing function. And can communicate with central servers, usually in the cloud,
yeah,
via the internet. It's about as simple as that. Like, that's the internet of things.
Yeah, like if you think, boy, this all sounds weird, and I don't use stuff like that. If you have anything that has the word smart in front of it,
yeah,
then you're probably using the internet of things already.
Right.
If you've got a smartphone that connects to a smart thermostat or a smart smoke detector, or if you wear a exercise tracker,
mm-hmm,
that's the internet of things.
Right, exactly. And there's a lot of obvious steps that are right there on the horizon coming after this, is like the idea that your refrigerator,
yeah,
will be able to be like, oh, these guys are almost out of cashew milk.
Yeah.
I'll contact Amazon and have it delivered in 2 hours.
Yeah. And you're like, I don't drink cashew milk anymore,
you
fridge.
Stupid fridge. How many times do I have to abuse you?
But that's pretty neat. I mean, I think a lot of this, it's both good and a little creepy. Like, that'd be cool if I showed up at home one day and I was out of milk and it was waiting on my doorstep. Although milk you wouldn't want waiting on your doorstep.
Oh, cashew milk, it doesn't matter.
Oh, you don't have to refrigerate it?
No way.
It's because it's not milk, it's cashew juice.
Yes, it is.
That's what they should call it.
I don't disagree with you, right? Like, I'm sure it is pretty neat. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And in 5 years, it'll be totally second nature to us, right?
Right.
But in my experience, the more mechanized, the more automated,
uh-huh,
the more convenient, and I just made air quotes,
yeah,
life gets, the more difficult it is to keep up with, the less simple it is, and the more horrific it is when something breaks down.
Interesting. So within simplification, you think it becomes more complicated.
Yeah, because you rely on machines that can break, and when they break, you're like, oh, I forgot how to order cashew milk. Where do you get that stuff?
So you think we're headed for idiocracy?
To an extent. But I think it's more than that. In the short term, I think it's just that it's so much easier to walk to a grocery store and buy cashew milk and walk back home than it is to ensure that your fridge has all of the updated firmware, and make sure that it's ordering correctly from Amazon, and to make sure Amazon gets there. And you're just relying on all these other components rather than your own 2 feet and the idea that the people at the store are going to have your cashew milk.
I see that in a way, but I also disagree in a way.
Like,
for instance, I have a few things in my life that I've set to auto order, like air filters, baby formula,
yeah,
stuff that my fridge water filter,
mm-hmm,
like this stuff gets shipped to me automatically, and it's wonderful because I don't have to think about it at all.
So does your fridge order itself, or you just put on a timer on like Amazon?
Yeah, it's on a timer to these, you know, not even Amazon, like, you know, the fridge filter company.
I gotcha.
You can just set it to auto deliver like every 60 days.
Okay.
So it's nice because I don't have to think about it. The only thing's missing is the camera or the device itself being hooked up,
mm-hmm,
telling the company, hey, my air filter is over,
right,
or, you know, spent.
Which would be pretty awesome, to tell you the truth. If,
yeah,
if your air filter could be like, it's actually, we're at 90%. We need to go ahead and order.
However, you know what? That's a little, I never really thought about that being a little dicey because, you know, you need a new water filter. Trust me.
Right.
Like, really? But what if you could get another month out of this one that you're throwing away and you're ordering early? Then they can sell another two a year to you.
Right, exactly.
You
that's what I assume,
like,
when
you're
they're
trusting them.
Like when they're like, you have to change your oil every 3,000 miles, or yeah, you need to change your water filter every 3 months.
You're like, I never change my oil.
Yeah, forget that. That's for chumps.
That's a scam. Anyway, all right, so that's a little personal overview. The phrase Internet of Things is actually coined, they think, in the late 90s by a guy named Kevin Ashton, who worked for P&G.
Oh, I'll bet he has a t-shirt that says, I coined the term Internet of Things.
Well, just so he can invite people to punch him in the face or give him a hug,
yeah,
depending on who you are.
Okay.
He worked for Procter & Gamble, and he had a presentation there at work where he said, you know what we should do? We should put radio frequency ID tags, RFIDs, on lipstick,
mm-hmm,
in the store, so, and have that hooked up to a machine where we could automatically send that information and say, hey, this store is running low on lipstick. get a shipment over there.
Yeah.
And he coined the term Internet of Things, supposedly, in that meeting.
And apparently, though, at this time, prior to that, the 90s were a big time for something called ubiquitous computing.
Yeah.
Which is the basically the predecessor to the idea of the Internet of Things, where like computers would just be integrated into our lives
right.
totally and completely. And the Internet of Things is in that vein a little similarly, but from stuff I've read, there's a lot of people who are like, didn't quite fulfill the promise of ubiquitous computing. This is just kind of like life's slightly more convenient now thanks to this. But
yeah.
that his original idea, Kevin Ashton's, makes total and complete sense. You know, like how many sales do you miss when your lipstick thing is empty until you find out it's empty and then get to refill it?
Yeah.
Like if your lipstick, the last one can be like, hey, I'm the last one here. You guys better send some replacements.
Right.
It's great. That makes perfect total sense. And that was ultimately the original basis of the Internet of Things. It's taking, dumb things.
Yeah.
And making them, like you said, smart by giving them the ability to sense their surroundings and communicate that data to a central server where it's analyzed and then the proper people are alerted.
Yeah, and here's the thing that I also never considered is they must have discovered that there was a need for that. And the only need I can imagine would be that the employees were so bad at realizing that they were running out of stock that they would go several days without having lipstick on hand.
Right.
So they were like, these people can't even do that.
Well, what if the what
so
if
let's
this,
automate
though?
It.
Let's say that you have a person whose job it is to restock lipstick, right? And they go 1 week, and there's like 5 million tubes of orange. So much orange, they just take a handful and throw it away, just because they don't want their bosses to feel bad about the orange lipstick that's not being sold.
Tubes of orange.
Come back, right?
Yes.
The next week, and it's all gone. It's
yeah.
sold out. And then it's erratic like that. You've got an employee you're sending there that's just hit or miss, whether you just wasted a bunch of gas in the employee's time, rather than
right.
being alerted, like, now you guys can come.
Right.
Before it's too late.
Sure.
That's the thing that makes the most sense to me. Kevin Ashton, genius.
Maybe so. I meant to look him up, see what he was doing these days. If he was just
wearing that t-shirt?
Or he might be a professional term coiner. You know?
He's the just other like, ones haven't worked out quite as well.
Just sit back and...
Fishnet of the future.
Yeah, that yeah. was... That kind of caught on a little bit early mm-hmm. in the 2000s.
Yeah.
But then it just... Yeah. Yeah. It went the way of the dodo, which was coined by
Kevin
great-great-grandfather.
Older yeah. brother, I was going to
oh,
say.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Tommy Ashton.
That's been around for a while. Since the dodo.
Since the dodo died.
All right. So let's talk about a little bit. What you've got essentially is a step-by-step system that many times starts with a smartphone
mm-hmm.
that's connected to the internet. Then you have other pieces of hardware in your home that are also connected to the internet. And there is most likely an app for that hardware on your smartphone.
Right.
And then that's usually sent out to the cloud. It's not some guy or some lady sitting in a room.
In your guest room.
Yeah, looking at your data. It's
you,
to
you
the cloud.
You took 8,000 steps today.
Just following behind you, counting. Oh, I lost count.
No, they're looking at the data from your wearable.
Yeah.
But
so,
they're just in your guest room.
That'd be kind of neat.
I don't know.
No?
I mean, it depends on whether they, like, get along with you or
Todd,
if they drink all your cashew milk.
Well, Todd drinks all the cashew milk, so.
That's why Todd's not wanted.
He's being counterproductive. So then it usually goes to the cloud, which is where we send our data these days,
well,
where it's analyzed.
And that's a big part of the Internet of Things too, Chuck, is the cloud, because
oh, yeah.
that means that you don't have to analyze the data in the little machine, in the little sensor. All it has to do is sense stuff and create that data and then send it to the cloud, where you're basically
uh-huh.
outsourcing all the analysis that takes a lot more computing power.
Yeah.
So that was a big development that there's such a thing as the cloud now.
Yeah, it kind of puts the smart into it all.
Yeah.
And if you're wondering how big it is right now, it depends on who you ask, but some say between 15 and 25 billion devices already that are connected and, some people say by 2020 or 2025, it could be anywhere from 50 billion to a trillion devices connected, depending on how much it catches on, you know, how everyday it becomes.
Yeah.
But it's headed that way for sure.
I don't think there's any going back from this.
No, there's no going back.
I think they're going to stick some sort of computing hardware that taps into the internet on everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Okay?
Yeah. All right. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a smart thermostat. Like, they have devices now that you can tag to everyday items to keep up with things.
Yeah.
Or let's say cameras that, let's say you have a security system at your house that you can view from your smartphone from anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And maybe it automatically calls the police. That's the Internet of Things.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great applications for it. And again, like, this is just, we're in the nascent period of this. Like, the stuff that's like, wow, holy cow, I have a smart doorbell.
Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's awesome and it works really well. But there's, you basically can't apply your imagination to predict what's even going to be 15 years into the future as far as the Internet of Things goes. Like, just the change in, how we deal and interact with the internet and our surroundings is inestimable.
Yeah, who wrote this one? Was this Strickland?
No, this was Bernadette Johnson.
Well, she wrote a line in here that I'm just going to read because it really kind of hit home for me. She said, "We've essentially given common physical objects both computing power and senses."
Yeah.
And that explains it to a T.
Yeah, she did a good job with this. It was a lot of information.
Like, you could do anything. You could make anything smart that you wanted. You could have a smart can opener.
Smart tube of lipstick.
Yeah, exactly. Or smart tube of toothpaste.
Yeah.
That, you know, when you're squeezing the end and you're, how do you get all the toothpaste out? What's your method?
Oh, you know, they make a little remover. I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, you got a machine?
No. Oh, well, yeah, I have a smart toothpaste remover. It's like a little, it looks like a, remember those candy lips, the wax lips?
Yeah, sure.
It looks like those, but it's plastic.
I have some in my pocket right now.
Okay, so pull those out.
Yeah.
If you had a slit in the lips, you put the tube of toothpaste in the end of it in there, and you just kind of tilt it at an angle a little bit, and it puts pressure, and you just slide it along, and it pushes it to the front. Yeah.
Huh. I use my toothbrush to do the same thing.
How? Oh, you slide the toothbrush along?
I just set
the
toothpaste tube on the sink and just, you know, use it as a... flattener? Squeezer?
Squeezer.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Interesting.
Yeah, I never realized you just hacked your toothbrush.
what do you pay for something like what you got? Like a dollar? I mean, is it like
something
a little...
like that? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Nothing too much.
Well, boy, I guess I got away with it.
See, now if there was some sort of computing chip on this thing that calculated how much toothpaste was left and sent that information to my app, that would be a smart toothpaste squeezer.
Right.
That's it.
Or you come home and open the mailbox and there's new toothpaste.
Yeah.
And you're like, I didn't even know I was out because I haven't been using my lippy device.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I forgot to brush my teeth for 3 weeks.
Let's take a break.
Yeah. It's getting a little silly.
Yeah. And you go brush your teeth and we'll meet back in here. And how long does it take you to brush your teeth?
Like 7-8 seconds.
Great. We'll be back here in 8 seconds. Hey everybody, it's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win, and that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball, and you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
By the way, 7 or 8 seconds is not nearly enough time.
Aren't you? No, that's washing your hands. You're supposed to do the alphabet twice.
For brushing your teeth?
Either for washing your hands or brushing your teeth.
You know,
I think you're supposed to do like 3 minutes for brushing your teeth.
I've got the, we won't name check here and buzz market, but I've got a mechanical toothbrush.
Mechanical?
And it, electric toothbrush, and it, you know, it has, it beeps.
Uh-huh.
And you divide your mouth up into four zones.
Oh, yeah, I think I have the same one.
Top left, top right, bottom left, bottom right, and it just beeps and
mine doesn't beep, it like vibrates.
Oh, really? Uh-huh. It's already vibrating, though. How can you tell the difference?
It changes its vibration.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
Or I guess maybe it's a pause in the vibration now that I think about it. I just assumed it was a vibration. Yeah.
Same deal, though.
Yeah. And they, again, there's smart toothbrushes that can keep up with how much you brush your teeth and that kind of stuff.
Are there really?
Yeah.
Huh.
They're Wi-Fi connected toothbrushes that connect to an app.
You know, my brother-in-law, the Marine Corps general, I used to laugh at him because I was in his bathroom once and opened the drawer and he had a log of his razor and shaving log.
Wow.
And like how many times he'd use the razor.
Yeah.
And it's basically pre smart Internet of Things, smart razor.
Right.
Because I'm sure they have those now to alert you like when you should change your razor blades.
I haven't heard of that one, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was.
I just thought it was very funny. I mean, it said a lot about who he was.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And no surprise that he's a Marine Corps general, if he's keeping up with stuff like that.
I can see him like, I met him, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Just sitting at the edge of the bed right before bedtime, petting his cat 50 times, no more, no less, and then putting it in the footlocker at the end of the bed for the night and like tucking himself in.
Yeah. He's the one that turned me on, to peeing sitting down too. So. A great debt to him.
Nice. Hats off. Is he coming to our DC show again?
No, man. They're transferred over overseas for the first time ever.
Are they coming to our UK shows?
No, not that overseas. I'm not
are
allowed to say.
Are they in the Azores?
I'm not allowed to say where he's going.
Okay. That's cool. I'm with you. Top secret, huh?
Well, I can tell you off the air.
See those blinks?
Yeah.
That says, I see what you're saying.
It probably doesn't matter. I'm just respecting his privacy.
That's cool.
By telling everyone that he taught me to pee sitting down.
Man, you really are starting that national combo, aren't you?
I just think it's important, you know. We need to be talking about it. No mistakes is the motto, the tagline.
Yeah. Yep.
No drips, no runs, no errors.
Nice.
Did we just take a break and we came back with this garbage?
Yeah. Maybe we should start over again.
No, we're all right.
We'll leave that up to Jerry.
All right. Well, let's talk about the tech. How about that?
Yeah.
Telemetry. Nothing new.
No, apparently. This says, and again, the whole basis of the Internet of Things is what's called machine-to-machine communication.
Yeah, M2M.
Right? You have, like, your smart lipstick just sitting there sensing that it's the last tube.
Uh-huh.
It can sense all day long, and it's still a dumb stick of lipstick.
Yeah, it doesn't have a mouth. It can't tell you.
Right. Unless it can communicate that data to the people who need to know that stuff.
Right.
And they do that through machine-to-machine communication. And like you're saying, telemetry was the original version of that, which apparently dates back to 1912.
Yeah, it comes from the Greek. Tele means remote, and metron means measure. And that's where you're basically in a remote area. You would measure something.
Oh, okay.
And then send that via, back then, telephone line.
Right.
Like an Arctic station or something set up to watch animals, like, deep in the jungle or something.
It's like, there's a wildebeest. Oh, my God. There's a wildebeest.
Yeah.
That was early telemetry.
Exactly. And that's essentially just an extension of what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Or now it's an extension of from then.
Well, we've built upon that. I mean, think, like, the first dial-up stuff, that was, I would guess, probably telemetry. You know, the series of, like, the and the and all that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you're sending signals from one machine to another saying, let me online.
Yeah.
What's your problem?
Yeah.
Why are you so slow?
And what's allowed the Internet of Things to take root very simply. It gets more complicated, but the invention of the World Wide Web by Mr. Tim Berners-Lee in 1991.
Hats off, man.
Then the ubiquitousness. Is that a word? Mm-hmm. Ubiquity?
Ubiquitousness.
Ubiquitousness of Wi-Fi.
Although, yeah, I think ubiquity is, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wi-Fi. I do the Porky Pig thing where I just skip it.
Right.
The widespread nature of Wi-Fi all of a sudden where, you don't have to be physically connected to something. That really advanced things.
That's a
high
big
speed.
One.
And then, like we already said, the cloud.
Yeah. I think the cloud is the thing that really kind of allows it more than anything else. It's just, if you had to have that kind of computing power right there in the sensor, then it just would be very limiting. You couldn't put it on just anything. And it would be a lot more expensive too. These things that they're adding to, you know, normal inanimate objects to make them smart are very cheap.
Yeah.
To produce.
Yeah.
They just need a few components. They need computing hardware.
Mm-hmm.
They need sensors. They need communication hardware. And then they need some sort of power source, which you can get that from the machine itself that you plug in, right?
Right.
So like if it's a smart coffee maker, it can draw power from the plug that the coffee maker runs off of.
Yeah.
And then it needs internet access, which if you have a smart coffee maker, but you don't have internet at your house, you made a poor decision in your coffee maker purchase.
Yeah, like pretty much everything comes with internet access at this point, right?
In the Western world, for sure.
The other thing we've kind of been talking about is, your own devices in your home, but you don't have to be just hooked up to things that you own. You can hook up to other, like, system devices. Like, let's say your town has, devices that monitor traffic conditions.
Mm-hmm.
You can tap into that. I guess that's what Waze is, right? Or is that all self-reported?
I looked up and, it seems to be all self-reported, but there's something called, like, Waze Citizen or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And it appears to be Waze trying to get smart cities to let them tap into their information.
Like traffic cams and stuff like that?
Yeah. And apparently that's already a thing. Like if you just leave your phone open or like the Bluetooth on, if
uh-huh.
you're driving through a smart city with traffic sensors, it basically uses your phone's information while you're in traffic as real-time traffic information. Because your phone has something like an accelerometer in it, so it knows how fast you're moving at any given point. And
yeah.
if it's giving that information to just a panel on the side of the street, that panel can put all that info together and be like, oh, Peachtree's like super backed up right now.
Right.
And then if Waze can get their hands on that information, they can send that out to their users. But for right now, Waze, as far as I know, is a social app still.
Right.
It relies on its users to update conditions.
Right.
Which, by the way, Waze, I think, might be the best app of the 21st century so far.
I didn't start using it. I had it on my phone for a while, but I never used it, but have a little bit recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like interact with it much. I'll just set it to tell me where to go.
Right.
Like I don't report accidents and things.
Oh, you should.
Does that mean I'm a bad user?
I mean, you're using like the efforts of other people without contributing. I mean, the point is for everybody to contribute.
Right.
It makes it more robust, but it's not like they're
going to
show up at your house.
Like safely. Do you pull over on the highway and
well,
report an accident?
That's probably the one big thing about Waze is that like you're not supposed to be using it in that situation.
Right.
If you're the driver, you're supposed to be the passenger.
But they're also kind of telling you to, you know.
Well, I mean, there's a thing that when it comes up
uh-huh.
or when you try to start, it'll say like, "Are you a passenger?"
Right.
And they just assume that you're going to just be truthful about that.
Yeah, that's like the websites that say like, "Tell us you're 21 by clicking
right,
here."
Exactly. And then welcome to the party.
Yeah, and a 20-year-old's like, "No, shoot,
yeah.
I can't click on this
so
thing."
So close. 2 weeks. I'll be back in 2 weeks.
The other thing I was wondering too, like, what if the lipstick, as an example,
mm-hmm.
what if that's open to where you can look at your app and say like, "Well, no, this store's out of lipstick."
Oh, that'd be cool.
You know?
Yeah.
Instead of having to call and talk to a dumb person.
I know, it's awful. Wait for them to go look with their eyes.
Well, but, you know, I get it, though, because nowadays you call and say, "Hey, I want to check and see if you have something in stock." And you're usually met with, "All right.
Yeah.
Hold on." And not like, "Sure, I'd be happy to go check
right.
for you, sir."
They're like, "Oh, man, I can't wait to get outsourced to a robot."
Right, but then you get to the store and they don't have it in stock. And you're like, I called and asked someone, and they're like, who'd you talk to?
There's no one by that name who works
yeah,
here.
Yeah, sorry. And he's like got covering his name tag with his hand.
And Chuck, speaking of smart cities, you know, traffic info is a big one.
Sure.
So is smart traffic lights, which
oh yeah,
I wish these had been around starting when I was 16.
Yeah.
Because there are a few things to me that are more of a waste of time than sitting at a traffic light when there's no traffic going through.
Yeah, Decatur, where near where I live, is famous for its lights not being timed or tripped or whatever.
And
you sit there forever.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, Decatur does have really long lights. And yeah, they don't even have the, we found out it's either a metal detector or a weight sensor.
Yeah.
That where there's like the lines that where they obviously cut out the hard top in front of you,
uh-huh.
in front of a light. If you don't even have that, that's a problem. But even those ones that have sensors don't always like do it immediately. This should be like,
yeah.
It should be a lot smarter than that, and that's part of
you
what's
sit there
coming.
Revving your engine. You're that guy at the stoplight. You know Decatur's motto when you drive in. It says Decatur. What's your hurry?
Really?
No. But oh, it
I could kind of see it actually. Slow down,
Decatur. What's with all the baby strollers? Could yeah. be another one.
Off-road baby strollers.
What?
They have those big off-road like jogging baby strollers
oh.
with the huge tires.
Yeah, everything. I got one of those.
Yeah.
But that's
you live in Decatur.
Well, no, I mean, that, I don't really go off road, but that's because the sidewalks in my neighborhood are awful.
It's off road.
They suck. Yeah, it is off road. Might as well be.
Like tree roots growing up everywhere, that kind of thing?
Yeah. They're like, oh, this tree's never going to grow. Let's put a sidewalk up right next to it. Well, you're talking about smart cities. The other cool thing potentially that they could do, they might actually be doing this, is infrastructure, like embedding sensors into sidewalks, well, that's a good example, like a sidewalk that becomes cracked or broken or a bridge
sure.
that becomes weak in one point.
Yep.
They can send a signal and say, hey, maybe you should come check out this bridge.
And then eventually they will send a signal to the robot sidewalk crew
uh-huh.
who will come out and
right.
repair the sidewalk and everything will look perfect all the time thanks to the robots.
Right, but there's 40 robots and like 30 of them are just standing around and 10 of them are working.
And where did they learn to smoke cigarettes?
Yeah, this seems weird. I used to get so rubbed at cigarette breaks because I didn't smoke.
Oh, yeah.
And I was always like, oh, you know, I'm just going to go stand outside. And the boss would be like, you can't do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, you could take a break, but cigarette breaks weren't even real breaks. Someone's
yeah.
just like, I need to smoke.
Yeah.
But you could never go, you know, I'm just going to go stand outside for 5 minutes.
Right.
Like, you have to be killing yourself to make that allowed.
Yeah, no, that dawned on me when I was a smoker, too, that, like,
that's when I was young and, like, you know, I was more angry back then.
About justice.
Yeah.
So, again, we can sit here basically all day and talk about, you know, devices and applications for this kind of thing.
Sure.
But there's some hurdles that are coming up that need to be addressed pretty soon. And we'll talk about those right after this.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today. Health Aid kombucha.
All right, Chuckers, we're back.
Hurdles.
So right now there's some immediate hurdles, including the idea that a lot of smart technology operates on using totally different languages, different protocols, different everything. So that if you have a house full of different smart gadgets, you probably have an app for every single one of them rather than one integrated gap or app. And it's not a hurdle, like you can have that many apps, but the idea of it being seamlessly integrated into just one part of your phone would be great. And if they could talk to one another without you having to control it, you know, like the light sensor on your light shade notices that the sun's starting to go down, so it opens your blinds a little bit, right? Uh-huh. And when that happens, your smart cantaloupe slicer knows that you like a slice of cantaloupe before dinner.
Yeah.
So it slices up the cantaloupe, and they're all talking to one another. So it's not like everything's on a timer and things happen at once. It's happening because one thing is sensing this, and it's relaying that information to the other devices in your house as well. That's not happening right now.
Yeah, what I need is I need between 7 and 9 a.m. I need my toilet to flush about every 8 minutes.
Oh, yeah? Man alive.
That'd be my smart house. Or as soon as the coffee starts brewing, 7 minutes later, the toilet flushes.
That happens to you? Coffee's good for that.
It's great for that.
Well, that's another thing that's coming very soon, too, is smart toilets. I can tell you, like,
oh, sure.
You got a lot of bilirubins in here.
Yeah.
What's up with that? Yeah. That's what it'll say. What's up with that?
So basically what you're talking about is systems that aren't integrated, because it's a bunch of different companies with all their own devices.
Right.
But there are companies trying to come together to join up with open source platforms. And one of them is created by Qualcomm called the All-Seen Alliance, which is it sounds something like from a future horror movie.
Yeah.
That sounds really creepy. The All-Seen Alliance.
Right. Or Newspeak.
Like, you might as well just say, like, we want a camera in every room of your home so we can all just talk to each other and make your life simpler.
Mm-hmm. Just relax. Lay back.
Apple's HomeKit. Yeah. They always make it sound cute and not creepy when it's probably creepier than the All-Seen Alliance.
Yeah, a bunch of people have one. Google has them, Samsung. There's one called Everything that's missing a couple vowels. Wink is a big one.
I've heard of Wink.
It's a big one right now.
Yeah.
It can control some stuff, like, I think, Philips lights, and it works with Nest, maybe, or something like that. It does, like, two things, so it's, like, cutting edge right now. But as the author of this article, Bernadette Johnson, puts out, none are all-encompassing, which I saw that, and I was like, Mitch Hedberg would have liked that sentence.
None are all-encompassing.
Yeah, he said he was, like, trying new words, and rather than, like, totally, he said he was using totally too much.
Uh-huh.
They'd be like, Mitch, do you like s'mores? And he'd be like, all-encompassingly.
So another hurdle that we are already getting around was back in the 90s, we started to realize we were running out of IP addresses.
Mm-hmm.
The standard IP address was the, it still is in some ways, the...
IPv4?
Yes, IPv4. Yeah. And in the 90s, they got smart. It wasn't like the Y2K bug, where they're like, oh, my gosh, things are going to be different in a month.
Right.
They got on this a while ago and created the IPv6 and started potentially, what's the number? An undecillion number of 340 undecillion addresses.
That's so many.
That is one with 36 zeros behind it, and enough to give IP addresses to everyone on the planet times 10 to the 28th power.
Right.
So basically they said, we don't want to run out ever again.
Well, the funny thing is, Chuck, is in 1981 when they came up with the IPv4, that came up with 4.295 billion possible addresses.
They were like, no way we'll ever run out.
They're like, we're done.
Yeah.
And then within like 35 years, they started to really run out. And apparently there was a prediction that in 2015, we were going to straight up run out of IPv4 internet addresses or IP addresses.
Yeah.
And apparently that was a cliff we avoided, obviously, because we're still making things that have their own IP addresses.
Oh, I thought they did run out.
No, they used different things to mitigate it, including this network address translation really kind of opened things up. And that's where a server identifies a network as a single IP address and then leaves it to the local network to decide where the information that's supposed to be going to one computer on the network goes.
Right.
See what I'm saying? But to the server, to the rest of the internet, that whole network, which can be a ton of computers, is just one IP address. So you just reduced it by that many computers that are on that local network.
Gotcha.
So that was a big one. But then also building new things on the IPv6 platform has helped mitigate it a little bit too. So I think it's a cliff that we came very close to but avoided going over.
Well, it doesn't matter now because IPv6 is the new way forward.
It is, but there's a lot of stuff still in use that's plenty good for the next couple years.
Yeah.
That have like IPv4 addresses that still need to like, they're like, me too.
Well, that doesn't matter. They're compatible now.
Well, they're working to make them compatible, I think.
They're already a long way down that road.
Like, oh, yeah?
They're using both seamlessly pretty much.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, then
there's a great Wired
world is saved.
Well, I think so. There's a great Wired article about it. And they basically said at first they weren't entirely compatible. You had to have some sort of layer in between to make them basically be friends.
Okay.
And they're still working on it. It's not, like, finished. But it said so far the transition has been pretty seamless. Like, you're interacting with IPv6 right now and you don't even know it.
Yeah, I would assume, like, if you have something that was made in the last couple of years, it's probably IPv6.
Yeah.
That's what I would guess.
Sure.
So that's pretty neat. Undecillion. Didn't even know that was a thing.
I didn't either. I had to look it up. It's like, what the heck is that? A typo?
Right. On. So I don't think we can put it off any longer, Chuck. There's a lot of security and privacy concerns that crop up from the presence of the Internet of Things, right? If you have a bunch of sensors in your house collecting data on everything from, you know, how many times you toss and turn in your sleep.
Right.
To, you know, how many minutes the toilet needs to be flushed in intervals.
Mm-hmm.
To whether you're moving around your house or not, whether you're home. There's a lot of sensors in, even now, the standard home in the United States, that are collecting data, and there's not a lot of regulation on what happens to that data, who has access to that data, how safe that data has to be, and, it's just wide open for government surveillance, hackers.
Well, yeah.
Targeted ads.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you're paranoid about government stuff, then this probably worries you. Hacking is a whole different can of worms. Like, right. Everyone should worry about that.
Yeah, I feel like everyone should worry about government surveillance as well. Big
some,
time.
Some people, you know, think that's bunk.
Well, government surveillance?
Well, some people, yeah, sure.
They're fools.
Maybe
so. People are utter fools.
And the world is full of fools.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
How could you not? I mean, like, there's testimony from the head of the NSA. There was Snowden releasing the prison files. Like, how could anyone just say, no, that's not the case anymore?
Well, what you're saying is everyone should be as up on this as I am. And that's the foolish statement. If you went and asked 100 people on the street today,
I see what you mean.
I bet 50 of them would say, oh, that's just conspiracy stuff. The government
wouldn't
do that.
I see. I thought you were saying, like, people knew and they were saying, like, no, this isn't a real thing.
No, I think
I got you.
Most people probably have their head in the sand about
okay.
this stuff.
Totally agree. I see what you mean.
Yeah.
I still think they're foolish.
Well, sure.
And sad, because there's the one thing that would press security into the Internet of Things.
Yeah.
There isn't any right now. There's virtually none.
Well,
in.
I mean, it's all got to be self-installed, not by the person, but by the company.
Right.
Like, hey, we know you're probably worried, so we've done this, this, and this.
Right, right. And the way that will happen is if people say, ooh, that brand's not very secure, I'm going to go to their competitor, which is super secure.
Or if they get sued.
Sure. And that will cause brands to,
yeah.
which are self-regulating right now as far as security goes, to become more secure. But if people are unaware of it or just don't think that kind of stuff is going on, then there's not going to be any call for that, and they'll be able to continue to put sensors in our home, devices in our home that can eavesdrop on us, that can detect all sorts of different things about us without any thought for security whatsoever.
Yeah, well, they have a great example in here, and it's not just the Internet of Things. This is already happening. With Target, his dad in 2012 got mad because his teenage daughter was getting baby ads targeted toward her. And he was like, why are you trying to get my teenage daughter to have a baby? Why do you keep sending her this stuff?
Right.
And he found out she was pregnant and was like, he actually apologized to them. But I still think like he had a beef, because what I thought is they were just using her search information to target ads, like, which is what goes on all the time.
Right.
But she wasn't. What Target does is they have every customer, every time you shop at Target with a credit card, you have a guest ID number that says, oh, here's that credit card from Josh Clark again.
Sure.
He's back in my store. Here's all the things that he's bought. So let's target ads at him just simply by shopping there without using cash.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know that happened.
Well, yeah, and it used to be you had to sign up for like a rewards program, like a Kroger card or something like that.
Yeah, that I understand.
This is the same thing without you opting into it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's just tracking your credit card. And I think it was New York Times. I read one article where eventually they quit talking to the New York Times, but he got a little information at first. And he said he talked to a Target employee that said, here's a hypothetical example. Let's say there's a girl in Atlanta shopping here. She buys cocoa butter lotion. She buys a big purse that could be a diaper bag. She buys magnesium supplements, and a bright blue rug. They might just surmise, hey, I bet this lady's pregnant. Mm-hmm. Bet she's going to have a boy because she's going to buy that bright blue rug.
He's going to smell like cocoa butter.
And yeah, and so, you know what? I bet you she's due in August too, determined to buy what she's purchasing.
Right.
So let's start bombarding her with ads.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems a little creepy. If you're not opting in with a, I mean, it's a little creepy anyway, if you get like the shopper's card.
Yeah.
But you're saying
like, sure, I'll take a little bit of a discount in exchange for you keeping track of my spending habits.
Or you willingly check the box, terms and conditions, without reading it.
Well, I think terms and conditions should be a whole other episode, man.
Yeah, there's a documentary about that.
Yeah?
I think it's called Terms and Conditions Apply.
Nice.
And it's, maybe, but boy, it is creepy.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, well,
nobody ever reads that stuff.
No way. And they make it that long so that no one would.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah. And there's actually, we read this Guardian article. Did you check that out that I sent you?
Yeah.
So in the Guardian article, there's a mention of Samsung, which had, they had terms and conditions for their TV. I think it was in 2014 or 15 that it came out. And it says, in the terms and conditions for the TV that you bring into your home.
Uh-huh.
Please be aware that if your spoken words include personal or other sensitive information, that information will be among the data captured and transmitted to a third party through your use of voice recognition, which means your TV is listening to you and transmitting your conversations, or at the very least keywords from your conversations in your voice, to somebody else who can figure out how to target ads, who can put you on a government watch list, who can do anything, which means that you're talking normally in your own home and your TV's eavesdropping on you.
Yeah, and you say that's okay, not you, but one says, no, that's fine because I don't want to touch my remote. I just want to say, turn up volume.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I can't be bothered to use my finger.
Fine.
So now I'm getting spied on.
Nicolas Cage movies, comma, bad ones.
He doesn't make bad movies.
Dude.
Kidding. I used to love Andy Samberg's Nick Cage on SNL.
I don't think I ever saw that one.
So funny.
I like Nick Cage's Tiny Elvis.
Oh yeah, that was good.
It was so bizarre.
I love Nicolas Cage because he's unabashed. He will do some really great smaller movies where you're like, man, this dude is an amazing actor.
Right.
And then he'll do the worst garbage you can imagine for money.
Yes.
And just is like, yeah, I want to buy 8 new motorcycles.
But I think he's a great example of what a good director can do with an actor if they know what they're doing with them.
Sure.
Because he does virtually the same thing in all movies. It's just how much more he's doing it and how much he's reined in or how good the script is.
Yeah, he comes in, he's like, you want 20% Cage or 80% Cage?
I mean, you're right. He has made some great movies, but man, he has made some bad ones. Wow. Oh, wait, hold on. Yeah, let's get back on track. There's one other thing, too. There's a big debate going on right now, Chuck, about whether your phone is eavesdropping on you for, at the very least, targeted ads. Mm-hmm. Again, if you think that your phone is not eavesdropping on you, you're deluding yourself.
Yeah.
Your phone, your TV, your laptop, everything around you that is connected to the internet and has a microphone and or a video camera is eavesdropping on you.
And you don't care, right?
I do care, but I also have a feeling like...
But you have a smartphone.
What can I do? I know.
Well, you could not have a smartphone.
That's part of it, and that's a big thing. There's a trade-off. It's like, okay, I want to be able to read Twitter every 30 seconds and just be like, bah, this is boring, and then do it again 30 seconds later.
Uh-huh.
And I'm willing to trade that ability for the idea that, yeah, I'm being listened to, and the gamble that, well, I mean, I guess I'm not saying anything that important.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean, like, that's wrong. Like, that's wrong.
Well, or the people who say, like, well, if you don't have nothing to hide, then, you know, who cares?
That's a fallacy. That's a logical fallacy.
Of course
that
it is.
A lot of the people collecting that data bank on.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It still has a chilling effect on society at large. And if they ever do want something on you, brother, they got it.
Yep. And sister.
Man, I'm sorry. I'm worked up. I was driving in today, Chuck, on my smartphone and checked Twitter. I'm gonna be cool.
No.
No.
Then that light didn't change green. It all went south.
It's a dumb traffic light.
All right, so we talked a little bit about hackers, and we're not just talking about stealing your information or tapping into your bank. What about if your grandmother, who is a shut-in, has this great new smart health system that is hooked up to her body and alerts her doctor if something's wrong, if she's low on meds? These are all great things, but what if someone can hack into that and tell, you know, and hack into grandma's system to where it doesn't alert, then her life is literally at stake.
Yeah.
Or what if you have, and this has happened too, what if you go into your baby's room and your baby monitor, you hear some guy's voice on the other end yelling and screaming curse words.
Yeah, in Russian, I think.
That's happened too.
Yeah.
That
is, your baby's just like, what's this guy's problem?
Yeah, he usually tells me nice stories.
Where's Sergey? I want Sergey back.
It's all really creepy, man.
You know, one of my heroes, Charles C. Mann, who wrote 1491 and 1493.
Well, I never heard of it.
He wrote an article in Vanity Fair called Look Out, He's Got a Phone. And it was all about the ways that the Internet of Things could be hacked to, like, basically really threaten somebody. Like, if you got a smart pacemaker or a smart insulin pump, those things could be hacked.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that we're going to have to deal with, or we're dealing with now as it stands.
Well, one of the things that could help and what should be going on is these devices, at the very least, should be giving you options on how much data they get their hands on, how it's stored, and what the expiration date on that is. Like, if you quit using this device, they still have your information.
Right.
Or
it might still be collecting it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Or one I didn't think about, when these systems are no longer supported, like, you know, the company shuts down or something, it needs to have a suicide measure programmed in,
right,
to where it kills itself after it's not supported anymore.
Yeah, and it should do it gruesomely.
What about economics?
Well, as you can imagine, if there's hundreds of billions of devices on the horizon being connected, it's going to have a pretty big economic impact. And they're talking about something on the order of, what was it, $4.3 trillion in value by 2024, up from $900 billion.
Yeah.
It seems low to me.
Yeah.
You know? Like, think about just in cashew milk alone.
Sure.
It's $1 trillion.
Yeah. Well, it's also costing some companies.
How so?
Well, if you've heard of Square.
Yeah.
You probably pay for a lot of things with Square these days. It's a great thing because it allows a small business. Previously, there was only one way to make credit card transactions. Mm-hmm. You had to get a fairly expensive system that, or a cash register.
Yeah.
That, you know, made it all possible.
Right.
And they kind of had you over a barrel a little bit. Then Square came along and said, no, you know what? You don't need that stuff.
Let's democratize this.
Yeah, we have the internet now. Here's some competition. All you need is this little thing to plug in to your tablet, and you can swipe it right there in the cab or in the place of business and avoid the middlemen and use or use PayPal and basically skirt these companies that have kind of been ripping you off.
Right.
As a business, and then that business passes the cost on to you as a customer. So, in a way,
oh yeah, or they're good. Like, we don't take that credit card; their fees are too high, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you're right; it's the democratization,
which is good. I mean, it's great. It's opened up a lot. It's taken Etsy into the real world.
That's right.
You know,
and isn't that awesome?
Oh well, yeah.
There's also worry that it could cost jobs, like you said. What if the lipstick stocker gets fired?
Because he threw away all those orange tubes of lipstick?
Yeah.
He deserves it.
He didn't do his job good enough.
Well, I think this article kind of glosses over that issue. And it's a big issue in and of itself.
I don't know, but I don't think it glossed over it so much as there's a school of thought, a very, prominent school of thought that says, no, that's not what happens.
Yeah.
People get different jobs and learn new things. Mm-hmm. And the one example they used in here, which I think makes sense, is ATMs.
Mm-hmm.
ATMs popped up everywhere, and people are like, oh, well, there's not going to be any more bank tellers. No one needs to go to a bank.
And well, yeah, but they actually increased in number, right?
Yeah, they did. And they think part of that reason is because banks could open more branches because they didn't need to staff it with 14 bankers. They just needed a couple.
Yeah,
but more branches meant ultimately more tellers.
Yes.
Just not in one place.
The thing is I would be very curious to know whether that was an anomaly like that. You know, if typically in an industry that gets replaced by a machine, a good one, like an ATM, works pretty well.
Right.
If jobs actually go up, or if that was just like one of the very rare examples of it.
Well, I think it depends on your industry. If you're one of the people that did that thing, you're like, well, I lost my job to a robot. If you build the robots, you're like, I got a job because I'm now building robots.
Right. And again, I think we talked about this. I don't remember in what episode, but if you are getting rid of an industry and putting a lot of people out of their employment, their careers, I'm not against automating stuff like that.
Right.
But I think part and parcel with that is to figure out a way to take those out of work people and train them to go into new fields, or just to build the stuff that took over their jobs or whatever. But you can't just be like, best of luck, we figured out a way for a robot to do what you're doing.
Right.
Go get hooked on OxyContin and go die.
Wait, what was that? Because we got a great listener mail about that.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. It was in reference to that.
A certain amount of people from this industry.
It was a Kentucky coal industry.
Something like that, where then cross-trained to do computer work.
Right.
Wasn't even that long ago, but I can't remember exactly what it was.
But that's exactly what I mean. Like, that's number one, that's a role of government, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's one of the clear things that you can look at and be like, oh, yeah, that's what government's for. They're supposed to invest in infrastructure and education to keep people employed.
Yeah.
So that everyone can earn a decent wage. That's my soapbox. This has basically been one long soapbox, hasn't it?
No, I don't think so.
Well, it's the Internet of Things. There's literally nothing more to speak about it. Okay?
No more.
I'm just kidding. And if you want to know more about that kind of stuff, you should go check out our compadre John Strickland's podcast, Tech Stuff. I guarantee he talks about the Internet of Things every other week.
Yeah, I would imagine.
If you want to know more about it in the meantime, you can look up this article on HowStuffWorks.com by typing Internet of Things on the search bar. And since I said things, it's time for listener mail.
No, sir.
Oh, yeah, we already did listener mail.
Well, that's right, but we have a bonus because now we're going to finish up with part two of...
Oh, yeah. Administrative details. Okay.
All right. Again, if you're new to the show, this is when we thank people for the nice things they send us.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes a little something like this. PETA, the organization, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, they sent us a cat care package after our cat podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And I think probably partially because of my soapbox on declawing and outdoor cats.
They're like, this guy.
Yeah, send him some cat stuff.
Get him some cat stuff stat.
So thanks for that.
Put a cat in a box and mail it to him. That's PETA's way. We got a postcard from China from Mary Kate Muller.
Oh, wow.
Thanks a lot for that, Mary Kate. We appreciate it.
Beautiful. Lisa of Black Bow Sweets sent us some candied pecans.
Dude, those are dangerous.
Oh, yeah? They did not last long in the Clark house?
No. Almost didn't make it on the ride home. I had to be like, I gotta stop. Yeah. Man, they are good. Aaron Supple sent us the bottle of Sonoma County Distilling Company's West of Kentucky Bourbon Number 1.
I haven't tried it yet. Is it good?
I have not tried it yet either, but I'm very much looking forward to it. So thanks a lot, Aaron.
And speaking of whiskey, 33 Books, Dave from 33 Books, sent us a whiskey tasting set.
Yeah.
Which is a little, I think imported from Ireland even, a little whiskey tasting glass.
Yep, a book for notes.
Uh-huh, and a pen even.
Yeah, it's everything you need.
Everything you need to taste whiskey. So thanks, Dave, for that.
We got a postcard from Caitlin and her fiancé from the Mayo Clinic. Remember the Helen Branch mention in, I think some Unsolved Mysteries?
Weird.
The episode on Unsolved Mysteries?
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. But we got a Mayo Clinic postcard.
Huh.
Yeah.
Why not? Robin and Aaron sent us some coasters, some Detroit coasters. They know even though we poke fun of Detroit, we secretly love Detroit.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
So thanks, Robin and Aaron, for that.
Mark Singleton over at Rudolph Foods sent us a ton of pork rinds
and
a bunch of great gear to go with it. So we can wear a camouflage hat while we eat our pork rinds.
Right, as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Meckling of Jepson's Malort of Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Sent us bottles of Malort. And if you've never heard of Malort, it is Chicago's own special liqueur.
It's something.
It is. It's known for its harsh aftertaste.
I guess that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, the great thing about Malort, though, is they know the deal. They're not like, this is so delicious, you're just never going to have anything better
mouth. Here, you seem to be having a good day. Let's change that.
Yeah, but Malort actually have gotten, this is the best thing you can say, I've gotten used to it.
Nice.
And it's an interesting taste. You should try it out.
Well, thanks to the dudes who sent us that. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank
it.
You, Sam.
Speaking of booze, I think we mentioned it the other day, but also, again, thank you to the people at Spring 44, which is a Colorado distillery, for the Old Tom gin that they sent us.
It's yeah, that was
just beautiful stuff.
Yeah, and actually just ran out.
Yeah.
So.
Just FYI.
Just throwing that out there. Badger body products, a competitor of my own wife, even.
That was Dave who sent us those.
Dave from Badger Body Products?
Mm-hmm.
Out of New Hampshire, sent us shaving stuff and sunscreen and beard oils and such.
Yep, that was Dave Morrell.
He was the beer guy.
Yeah, he worked at Sweetwater.
Yeah.
So he used to bring us Sweetwater. He's a great guy.
And like all beer guys, he ended up in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
But Emily, actually, my own wife, who has her natural body product company, went... And she usually poo-poos because people say they're natural and aren't.
Right.
She went, oh, she's like, Badger's good, actually.
Yeah.
She's like, they make good stuff.
Yeah.
So I use their beard oil now.
Well, thanks a lot, Dave. Yeah, I've been using they have a bug repellent sunblock that works, smells awesome.
Yeah.
It smells like citronella. It works like a charm.
So thank you for that. Pie Lady and Son.
Oh, yeah.
Out of New York. They sent us pie.
Dude.
And they were just getting started with their shipping program. And Pie Lady and Son, I have to tell you, it worked great. They showed up fresh and delicious.
Yep.
And by delicious, I mean really, really delicious.
Yeah, thanks a lot for that, guys.
Yeah, so you can support them as well. Pie Lady and Son out of New York City.
Zach Detmore sent us some beautiful cherry, walnut, and maple wood boxes. Those are great, Zach.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Got mine on my desk.
Yep, same here.
Matt Dent sent us he's a comic strip guy who's created the Willy Who comics.
Uh-huh.
Been around for 25 years.
I know. I saw that book. It's amazing.
Yeah, he sent us a big collection, yep. The collector's edition.
Congratulations, Matt. And Chuck, somebody made us a longboard that I've got.
Yeah.
Stuff You Should Know longboard. It's amazing. I don't know. We lost the correspondence. So I don't know who made it.
Yeah, so if you made it, send that in and we'll read your name.
Yeah, we'll re-thank you, but thank you very much for the longboard.
Our buddy Tyler Murphy.
He's our butter.
He is our butter. Our bread and butter. from South Dakota sent us some Instant Empire shirts and records.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Thanks, Tyler.
And I just realized that Tyler's emails have been going to my spam folder. So I emailed them today because I never look in there. And I happened to for something else.
Uh-huh.
And I saw a bunch of emails from Tyler. I'm like, dude, so sorry.
Yeah.
Hillary Lozar and Mike.
Dude.
I don't know if Mike's a Lozar or not.
Who knows?
But Hillary and Mike have been with us for years. They are also from the Dakotas and travel to see our shows in Seattle. And they're wonderful people.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary's a teacher. And they, as always, sent us delicious, delicious Flathead Lake cheese.
Dude, that is the best cheese on the planet, I think.
Goudas.
You got better cheese than Flathead Lake? Send it in. Let us be the judge.
Exactly.
Rachel Stone, who is an artist from Australia's East Coast, she has a site called landofwonderful.com. She sent us a lovely handmade card and letter. So thanks a lot, Rachel.
Yeah. And then finally, you got any more?
Nope.
Last one, Emily and the crew at Kickapoo Joy Drinks.
Oh, yeah.
They have their Kickapoo Joy Juice, and they're Atlanta-based, and they make all-natural drinks. Juices and sodas and things.
Kickapoo juice.
And they sent us a box, and that was super nice.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks to everybody who sent us stuff. We appreciate it every time, so thank you. If you want to hang out with us on social media, you can go to SYSK Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. You can go to facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. You can send us an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, stuffyoushouldknow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.